And welcome back to Bird's Eye View. This is your weekly podcast for a lack of insight and baseless opinion. I'm Scott Magnus, and I'm here with my, you know, less than worthy co-host, but I enjoy his company regardless, Jake English.
It's a pity thing, isn't it?
It's a pity thing, but you're a good guy.
You know what? I'll take the pity.
That's about as good of a compliment I can give you tonight, is, but you're a good guy.
I'll take the pity.
Yeah. This is episode 37, and in honor, this is going to be our Kevin Gausman tribute episode.
That's right. Gausman debuted wearing number 37 the same week that we were recording episode 37. As coincidences go, that's one of the more meaningless.
Yeah, and Jim Johnson has like a 37 ERA, so...
Ooh, spoiler alert. Are those the two things we're going to talk about tonight?
It's a good possibility.
Wow, you just blew it right away.
Yeah. All right, well, you can follow us on birdseyeviewbaltimore.com. You can also follow us on some of our sister sites, such as baseballpodcast.net. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/BEVcast, or you can follow us on Twitter at birdseyeviewbal. So the one thing we wanted to do is plug another site as well. There is a Orioles podcast on the net. It's called Section 336. They are one of our brother podcast on the Orioles Birdland community.
In the Birdosphere.
The Birdosphere, yeah. But we wanted to promote them a little bit and just say they're a great podcast. And they're also going to be doing a night at the yard where they're going to be hosting a game in Section 336 by Section 336, deja vu and everything, where you go get a shirt from them and you also get to see a wonderful baseball game against, well, a minor league baseball team in the Houston Astros.
Well, the nice thing about going to a game with a bunch of people against the Houston Astros is that hopefully the game will be such a quality that you'll have lots of time to talk to the person next to you. But the guys at 336 have been really great to us. They're good guys, and you should definitely both check out their podcast as well as make sure that you go onto Facebook and their site, which I believe is section336.com. You can find information on their ticket deal. I think the t-shirt is done by the guys at PTY, so
yep.
It's a good deal. You should go check it out.
Go spend your money.
That's right. There's nothing to buy here. Go elsewhere.
Yeah, you have no money to spend here, so go spend your money elsewhere. Now, if you want to send money to us, we're perfectly willing to spend it for you, but just go spend money if you can and get an Orioles ticket in that state.
All right, before we dive any deeper, let me go very briefly through the drink of the week. The drink of the week tonight is actually a Trogs Pale Ale. I'm drinking it out of a Das Boot, so it's just class upon class.
That's class right there.
Yeah.
I'm going with a tall glass of water since I've already drank myself silly for the most of the afternoon.
It's Memorial Day. That's important. It's an important step.
Yeah, I took a beer at 11 o'clock this morning, so it was a...
America!
Yeah, exactly. The fact that I was able to pop open a beer at 11 o'clock in the morning... makes me feel good to celebrate this country.
All right. Also, before we get any further, I wanted to kind of reveal our first bevy. And for those of you who remember, both of you, we're going to be doing an award show at the All-Star break. It's called the Bevies. And the first category that we're going to open up is biggest regression to the norm. Now, here's the thing. Before the season started, the haters, the stat heads, people who are grounded in reality, if you will, said...
So me. Not you.
I said...
Me. Not you.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Me and grounded in reality is not something that goes together. But they all said, you know, the Orioles can't do it again in 2012. They can't catch lightning in a bottle twice. This is going to happen, or this can't happen again. So these are the guys that we're talking about. This is the performances that we're talking about. Who is your biggest regression back to the norm for 2013. So go ahead, you can let us know by tweeting us at BirdseyeViewBall with the hashtag Bevys, that's B-E-V-Y-S. You can get to us on Facebook, you can leave a comment in the show notes, whatever. Send a carrier pigeon if you have to. But for the Bevys, the first category is going to be biggest regression to the norm.
I prefer bricks. Wrap one with some string and then put the note onto it and just throw it through windows.
Yes, we will read it. We will certainly read it that way.
It's going to get expensive, but... Yeah, you know, we're getting all that money from that podcast promotion that we're going to...
Right, yes, that one thing.
Yeah.
With that guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, before we move any further, it's my favorite time of the show.
The Brian Roberts Watch?
The Brian Roberts Watch.
So what's going on with Brian Roberts?
If we had production values, at this point we would have cricket noises.
Okay.
So I need everyone to just imagine a really clever cricket noise. Because there's nothing going on. The last update was from May the 18th. He's still recuperating. He's still miles away from being able to be even remotely close to baseball activity.
Banging the wife. All right.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I hope he's back up to all other activities, but...
highly unlikely.
Highly unlikely.
Moving on.
Let's take a walk through the medical wing. Something interesting happened this week.
Yeah, someone went on the DL, and that individual was Pedro Strop.
You know, it's funny because we talked about this possibility a couple podcasts ago, if he would just get sick and...
I think I said that would be BS and crap and it would never happen.
But guess what?
Guess
it's
what?
It's BS
happened.
And crap and it really happened. Pedro Strop went down with a, air quotes, lower back strain. And, I mean, I hypothesized on Twitter that perhaps he strained his back by turning around so fast by watching balls leave the yard. It's the only thing I can figure.
I would go on with, like, head contusion or head distortion because of how his hat was positioned on his head for so long.
No, we're not going Hatville. No, we're not doing that.
No.
Look, they've stashed Pedro Strop on the DL. I hope he can get himself right because...
Well, not to mention, too, by putting him on the DL, he also has the possibility for minor league rehabilitation, which means he can go down to the minor leagues for 30 days.
Right. It's not just the 15 days that he's on the DL. It's whatever he does.
It's 45 days.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. Here's and you never know. Something might just pop back up at that point.
Right. Suddenly, oh, he's just fine. Other notables on the disabled list at this point, Wilson Betemit with the PCL. He could come back at some point in June. Wei-Yin Chen is still out with the right oblique strain. He's not really clear as to when he's supposed to be back.
He's actually technically able to come off the DL relatively soon, but it's the aspect of he's not going to be ready to come off the DL, so it's going to be several weeks still left to work out that oblique strain.
I think Nolan Reimel falls into that same category of, well, he could be back, but it's probably going to take him a little while to work through that hamstring injury. He was set to begin physical therapy as of May 22nd, but...
Yeah, no
never
rush.
Know how that really reacts. Other than that, the usual suspects, you've got, of course, Brian Roberts on there. Taylor Teagarden, who's starting to take batting practice again, and Tsuyoshi Wada, who's actually participating in AAA rehab assignments. So there you have it. That is the medical wing. Nothing too eventful other than Pedro Strop hiding out.
That's right. Well, you know what? Enough of the bad news. Let's go on to good news for right now. Let's bring on the new age. Let's start talking about good stuff to come for Birdland.
All right, let's take a quick break and see just what dawns on me.
All right.
Hey, Scott, did you hear that they called up a pitcher on Thursday?
Jake Arrieta?
No, not the one I was looking for.
Zach Britton?
No.
I don't know who.
They brought up Kevin Gausman.
Oh, yeah, he's supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, he might be. Look, they brought up Kevin Gausman, and people lost their damn minds. And rightfully so. Kevin Gausman is a great talent in the minors. And it's very exciting when a first-round draft pick comes up to make his major league debut. But can we just temper our expectations a little bit?
Well, That's because the Ravens were doing their OTAs that week.
Absolutely. What could we possibly draw focus from the Ravens for to bring up Kevin Gausman? I love that you pulled us back there. And
no problem.
For those of you who are giving us blank stares, when Manny Machado was brought up to the majors, there were so many people in town that said, oh, well, the Orioles are just doing this to draw focus from the Ravens' first preseason game of the season. It was absurd then. It's absurd now. And it just takes me to a bad place. Anyway, so let's talk about Kevin Gausman. First, the most important thing we need to decide for ourselves is how do we hype this? So, Scott, I ask you, what are we calling the Kevin Gausman era? We've got a couple choices here.
Okay.
I mean, being a Beatles guy, I'm clearly all for Gausmania.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I've also seen some people throw out their Gausmas.
Okay.
So his first start would have been Gausmas. And I guess that means that Wednesday was Gausmas Eve.
Okay.
But my personal favorite, I think that we should go really dramatic and refer to this time period as the dawning of the age of Gausmania.
It's not bad.
It's got a ring to it, you know?
I consider myself to be an individual from the Gaustonian era.
Ah. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. At heart, aren't we all Gaustonians?
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. Well, let's just keep this all in perspective. This Gausmania that is all upon us, he could never possibly live up to that hype. So
what are you talking about?
Look
at Manny Machado.
It's true. We expect all of our high draft picks to suddenly come up roses.
Correct.
All right.
Ben McDonald really worked out well for us back in the day.
They all do. They always do.
That's right.
In that 14-year run we had, they all turned out great.
Matt Hobgood? Brilliant.
Yes. So let's talk about expectations. Outside of what we've already seen, and we will get to Thursday's game, what do you think is a fair baseline for what we should expect from him? And what do we call a successful season for Gausman if he indeed does stay up for the rest of the year?
Well, I'm going to let you start since you made me play a 1980s musical from the musical Hair. So I'm going to let you start since, you know, you made me play that kind of music on this podcast.
You know that I don't have enough sway to make that happen.
That's true.
You just like to throw me under the bus on the air.
That's a good point.
All right.
You gently suggested it, and I said, that's a great idea.
All right. So here's what I'm thinking as far as expectations are concerned. If Kevin Gausman can be a major league average fifth starter in his first year in the majors and, coincidentally, his second professional season, I would call that a huge success. I would call that a huge success for something that he can build on and something that, frankly, this team desperately needs. Because right now, we have a rotation full of basically number five guys or worse. And so if he can hold out the back end of the rotation, I think that'll go a long way. So what do I mean by a fifth starter, major league average? I'm looking for a guy who can give you 5 innings per start as a baseline. So, you know, sometimes he'll get knocked out in 4 1/3. Sometimes he'll give you 6 solid innings. A guy who's going to give you about a 4.50 ERA. And it's going to be some good, some bad, but most importantly, not a horror show every time he takes the mound. Fair, unfair, what do you think?
I think this is the first time you've actually ever came up with a fair and reasonable statement and conclusion to something going forward. And I'd just like to tip my cap to you and say, who are you and what have you done with Mr. Jake English?
Do you need a moment? I mean, do you need to, like, process? Do you want to stop the recording and just, like, breathe a little bit?
I'm going to just gain composure here. I am going to approach this as you would normally.
Okay, I'm listening.
So if you remember correctly, earlier this year I forecasted that Kevin Gausman would be on the Major League roster before Dylan Bundy, and that he would lead the Orioles into the playoffs, a.k.a. like Manny Machado did last year. Now, that being said...
You nailed the first part.
I nailed the first part. Now, that being said, I also said that he'd be coming up sometime in August, as opposed to May. So, I'm 2 months early, but, you know, that wouldn't be the first time I came early.
So, we've heard.
Yeah.
So, we've heard.
Yeah.
That's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast, yeah.
So I
that's the sexual chocolate podcast.
Please don't plug that here.
So anyway, I
ask you, do you think that he will exceed this bar of success that I've thrown out there, or do you think that's basically what we're going to get?
I think he's going to exceed that I think that he is going to have a sub-4 ERA. I think it's going to be somewhere around 3.2 to 3.5. I think he's going to have... I'm going to make a prediction. I think he's going to have double-digit wins.
Wow.
I think he's going to have double-digit wins.
Well, I mean, you do have time on your side.
I do have time on my side.
When he comes up in August, it's tough to get double-digit wins.
I think he's going to have double-digit wins. He's going to get double-digit wins. I think it's going to be 10 wins. He'll be right around that 9 to 10 win mark. And I think he does lead the Orioles into a playoff situation. Not situation, actually. He'll clinch the playoffs with the Baltimore Orioles being a solid number 2 or number 3 starter this season.
All right. Well, I mean, you made the comparison to Manny Machado before, and I think it's, you know, it's certainly valid because he's a high draft pick and lots of hype, lots of expectations. But remember, Manny didn't start out the way he did this year. You know, when he came up, he was basically very solid defensively, which was why he was there, and anything that he could give us with the stick was a bonus.
Well, it was the first week he exploded, and then for the next few weeks after that, he was very quiet.
Right, sure. He was a rookie adjusting to the major leagues, but the reason he stayed on the club is because we desperately needed his defense, which was outstanding.
Right.
So,
and in this case, we desperately need a fist.
We desperately do. But we have to remind ourselves that Gausman is going to have to learn at the major league level. And I don't think people are ready for the fact that he is going to struggle. You know, he's completely mowed down his opposition in the minors. Now here he is in the majors, and there's so much to like about the guy. But I think we need to temper our expectations because the guy is going to be learning on the job. And in some cases, he's going to be better than the opposition up here. And some days, he's going to get beat. And he's going to get beat bad, and it's going to be ugly.
Here's the thing. For Orioles fans, being a fan of Jake Arrieta, Brian Mattis, I think we know how to temper our expectations when it comes to pitchers.
Okay, so we have some experience.
We have some experience here. So we're not expecting all-world pro here. We're just expecting solid number 2 or 3 starter. Take, for example, the situation with Miguel Gonzalez last year. We weren't expecting much from him, but we've come to expect a certain level of performance from pitchers like that. We're not expecting he's going to be an ace, but we're expecting a solid amount of number 2 and number 3s. There was an interesting discussion being had with a national consultant, and they were actually talking about the Colorado Rockies. And they said that if you look at their pitching rotation, there's no solid ace on that team, but there's lots of 2s and 3s. Mm. And they actually went to the Rockies and were talking about it, and they said, you know, the Orioles really did a lot of this last year with their rotation. And they're saying, oh, you mean the Showalter method? And they basically just mentioned that the Orioles don't have like a solid ace, but they also don't have a fifth starter. They have a bunch of 2s and 3s. So I think if we can get by with just a bunch of 2s and 3s, you can follow a similar routine. Now, the problem with that is that's great during the season. But during the postseason, the question comes, when you run against CC?
Yeah, you need that guy.
Right.
Yeah, Elimination Joe. All right, so that's the baseline. That's the expectations. That's really where we gauge success. So let's talk about Thursday. In what we saw, what did we like?
The gas. He brought the heat.
He did. And it was easy heat, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a nice, compact delivery that looked really repeatable, and it didn't look like he was putting a lot of strain on himself. You know, he wasn't really lunging to get that heat. He wasn't all arms and legs to get there. It looked really good. I've seen the guy pitch in person, and I didn't realize he threw that fast, and it's possible he wasn't bringing that kind of heat in
spring training,
but... And he was lighting the gun up on Thursday.
He was bringing that kind of heat in spring training. That was actually the one big issue, which was with Bundy, is he wasn't bringing the heat like Gausman was, but people kept asking, is something wrong with Bundy?
Mm-hmm. And as it turns out,
speaking about that, going back to that topic, the report came out today as well, basically saying Bundy is pain-free.
That's good.
So
this is good.
We should have talked about during the medical wing aspect, but meh, it just came up to my head right now.
Yeah, and professionals would go back and edit that, but...
Meh.
Let's move on. That's not what we do here.
The other thing was his changeup was really good. You know, there was definitely a differentiation speed over 10 miles per hour between his changeup and his fastball.
Dude, his changeup was like consistently 82, 83. And his fastball was well over 94.
Okay.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, but again, it was over 10 miles per hour multiple times. And like you said, it was closer to being 12 to 14 miles per hour difference, which is pretty amazing, all things considering, because it's making your fastball even seem faster than it actually is.
And he seemed to have a pretty good idea of where the changeup was going.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a throwaway pitch. I think that his slider was passable. Everybody says, his slider needs work. I hope that's the case. You know, everybody talks about a pitcher having one or two or three plus pitches. Those are pitches that are way above average, that are good pitches. I think his fastball and his changeup are plus pitches. And I think right now his slider is a passable pitch. You know, I think he can use it when he needs it, but I definitely did see him not struggle with it, but he just didn't have the kind of
control.
Yeah, he didn't have the control he needed with his slider.
Yeah, I didn't see the control aspect with the slider. The other thing that I noticed too, that is, he went to the slider a lot more often than I was expecting him to. I thought he might pitch the slider 5 to 8% of the times, and it certainly seemed like he was using the slider a lot more often during the game, especially in key situations when it was like 0-2. At that point, use your heater and use your changeup and use your position. It seemed like he kept going to the slider, and then eventually he lost control of his fastball, and then that's when he got into the trouble.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Twitter, and I don't remember who it was. I feel like it was Buster Olney retweeting somebody, saying that basically a scout that was there on the premises said that he got away from his fastball and then lost it. And
yeah, that was me.
Oh, you were the unnamed scout?
Yeah.
Nice. I know that guy. Every time now I see unnamed sources or unnamed scout, yeah, I'll be like, I know that guy.
Yeah, I work with Buster Olney pretty happily on a day-in and day-out basis. So,
man, you talk with that guy and then you have to come and talk with me? That is rough living, my friend.
Well, what can I say? You know, I've got to do charity cases whenever I can.
That's right.
This is like Make-A-Wish, basically.
That's one of those, you know.
Oh, you didn't know you have cancer? I'm sorry.
Oh. Sorry, you had to find out this way.
Yeah. It would explain the legs, though.
That's right. And pale complexion.
Yeah.
Pale complexion. All right. The other thing about Gausman is that he certainly did not lack for confidence. You know, I'm sure he had the shakes, but he got into some rough situations and really gutted his way out of it, which I was pleased to see from a guy, you know, going through his debut. He also avoided, at least once, the big inning. And when he did that, the first time, I think it was in the fourth maybe, he avoided the big inning, and I was like, wow, that didn't blow up into a horrible situation.
Well, he avoided the big inning, but it was also the aspect of Buck got him out of there early before he could get into that big inning.
Yeah, I think it's the fourth he avoided it in a big way. He gave up some runs in the fifth where, you know, he got some men on base and it just kind of snowballed on him, and it would have been nice to see the same thing happen in that inning. But I was pleased to see that he was up to the task, and that it didn't seem like the stage was too big for him.
I agree. So, it didn't work out well for him in the end. It didn't really work well for the Orioles, but I was very impressed with the performance by Gausman. It'd be very interesting to see what he does tomorrow against the Nationals, against, you know, pretty much a weak offense from them.
Sure.
Especially with Bryce Harper out of the lineup right now.
Yeah, no, we are catching the Nats at a good time. And the only thing that concerns me is that they're not Canadian, so they're not as apt to roll over.
That's a good point.
I'm just going to throw that out there. You know, I thought, as far as the game was concerned, that Gausman deserved better than he got. Obviously, the bullpen came in and threw up all over the game, and his defense didn't do him a whole lot of favors. You know, he gave up four earned runs, and, you know,
It was first game. Let's see what he does for the rest of the season. I'm positive on him. You are much more rational, which, again, totally surprised about.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I mean, I am psyched about his start. I mean, it was fun. You know, I'm really excited about how good he could be. But I don't need him to be that good for me to feel like he's already done good work.
Okay. Well, now that we've brought the gas can out, let's move on to the next topic.
All right, why don't we keep that gas can right there on the mound?
But my soapbox is right here. I want to get right on it now and start screaming from the rafters.
All right, let's take a break. Take a deep breath.
I'm ready. I'm ready to light this thing on fire. Oh, wait. The gas can's already been lit on fire. Well, maybe someone could just go and drench it all over themselves and just light themselves on fire.
Wow, real subtle. All right, let's take a break. We'll come right back.
Okay.
Your fire. Hey, let's stand next to your fire. acting so crazy. You say your mom ain't home and ain't my concern. Just to play with me and you won't get burned. I've only want an itch and desire. Let me stand next to your fire.
Can I start now?
Oh,
can
please.
I just light it on fire?
You are ready to go. You're chomping at the bit. I'm just gonna sit back. In fact, I might leave the room. You go.
Okay.
You do this thing.
So Jim Johnson, another blown save against Toronto.
Oh, are people talking about this
year? Yeah, well, not so far because people were on holiday today, so they weren't able to call into Baltimore Sports Radio. But I guarantee you, as of tomorrow, when people are driving and having to go back to work, this will be an adamant topic for Baltimore Sports Radio for the entire week of what the hell is going on with Jim Johnson and what the hell are we going to do with him? So what are we going to do with him, Jake?
Well, it's actually kind of a complex question because I'm surprised that a guy like you really believes in the closer to begin with.
I don't.
Okay. So the question really becomes, are we going to keep him as the closer, or are we going to anoint a new closer, or are we going to do closer by committee? Now, a lot of people, a lot of smart baseball people think, dude, this is ridiculous. Just throw whoever's got the hot hand, throw whoever hasn't been used up, bullpen by committee, you know, closer by committee. Unfortunately, it's not Showalter. You know, he thinks everybody's got to know their role, and then he thinks that impacts how people perform. Okay, so we're stuck with having to have a closer. So your question comes to me, are we going to keep going with Johnson or are we going to bring in somebody else? Well, clearly, right now, you feel like, okay, we got to go with somebody else because Johnson can't do it anymore.
Now, a week ago, I would never have said that.
Right. And the thing is that Johnson is now looking, instead of like he did last year, 51 saves, you know, lights out, he's looking like the guy who couldn't win the job from George Sherrill.
Correct.
You know what I mean? But the thing is that look at the rest of our bullpen.
Yes.
I mean, obviously you would think a guy like Strope, you know, is enough of a question mark for hitters that he would be
Strope actually was one of the individuals that I thought at the beginning of this year would be an individual that could have challenged Jim Johnson for a closer role.
But he's completely fallen apart.
Absolutely.
All right, so you go and you say, okay, what about Darren O'Day? Darren O'Day is a guy whose stuff is just filthy McNasty. You know, he's been so lights out. My only concern about putting a guy like O'Day into the ninth inning is that he is that prototypical best guy in the bullpen that you bring in to put the fire out in the seventh or the
right.
sixth or the eighth. You know, he's the Swiss Army knife of the bullpen.
Correct.
And I just worry about taking that tool away for this, you know, oh, God, it's a save. Here's the textbook save. Let's put the guy in. All right, so...
Well, just remember, too, that Jim Johnson was that prototypical setup guy as well.
Sure.
Back in the day as well. So eventually, that setup guy always starts to turn it into the closer eventually. It's the same situation of, okay, look at Mariano Rivera. Mariano Rivera in 96 was the setup, and then in 97 he became the closer. So he hasn't been a closer in his entire career. You have Darren O'Day locked up for several years going forward because, again, we just signed him to a multi-year contract. Jim Johnson is currently in arbitration. His last year of eligibility is next year, and not to mention that he's going to be making over $6 million in arbitration.
Even if he keeps going the way he does?
Maybe less than that, but still.
Now may be the time to lock him up.
Right. But still, you're talking $6 million right now that you're going to pay for him. I mean, the situation is as simple as you can't keep throwing him out there because he doesn't have any command of his pitches. If you look at where Wieters is positioning his glove and where Johnson is throwing it, it's all over the place. If you look at where Johnson is releasing the balls, some of those balls where he's releasing it, the batters just lay the bat right on their shoulder because they know it's going to be high or away because it's nowhere even close to being where a pitch should be thrown from.
And he can't string together enough strikes for them to give them a reason to pull the bat off their shoulder.
Correct. Now, back in the day, that wasn't that big of a deal because he wasn't a strikeout pitcher. But now that he's not giving any positioning, and he's not able to throw it and get those flyouts or even the ground balls, he's not effective anymore. So he needs to be pulled from the closer. I'm sorry, but Jake, I'm going to say it. He's this year's 2013 protester.
You take that back, sir.
No, he's the protester.
You take that back, sir.
No, the only reason you can't get this through your head is because he doesn't have the Chris Sabo-like glasses on his face, and he doesn't have the and he has the Foo Fighters backing him.
That's true.
If he didn't have Chris Sabo glasses and he didn't have the Foo Fighters, you'd be saying he's the freaking protester.
I will admit that the Foo Fighters may be swaying. The other thing that I think Jim Johnson has going for him as far as the sentiment of fans is that he is an Oriole. He is one of our own. He came up through the system. He's a guy that we've tracked for years. He's been on some really terrible teams and been one of the bright spots. Whereas Kevin Gregg, the original protester, was just some guy.
Well, do you want to explain Kevin Gregg and the protester for those individuals that haven't been following us for, well, last year when we were, you know, clumsy and oafy and we didn't really know what we were doing?
You mean more clumsy and more oafy and knew less of what we were doing?
I thought that was implied.
Okay. So last year at some point I decided to try to be clever and, you know, the Arab Spring thing was happening and some guy lit himself on fire and started a movement and that was, it was, you know, it was a thing. You may have heard
it. It was a trend.
You may have heard about it.
Yeah.
And so I thought about it. I was like, you know, that guy, he's protesting. He gets up, he lights himself on fire, and he's a hero. You know what? Kevin Gregg goes to the mound with a gas can and lights himself on fire every night, and he's a villain. It's funny how those minor differences happen in life. It's all about circumstances. So
it is all about circumstances.
We started calling Kevin Gregg the protester. It was a bird's eye view thing, so all seven people that listened are very familiar with it. But, Scott, you're saying that Jim Johnson is this year's protester.
Absolutely, positively, no question about it.
See, my gut reaction is, my God, man, he can't be that bad.
My gut reaction is, look at the stats. So I decided to go back and look at the stats for Kevin Gregg versus Jim Johnson. So I picked Kevin Gregg's beginning of 2011 season since, at that point, he was fresh coming into the Orioles organization, and he was the albeit definitive closer for this team going forward. I decided to ignore the 2012 season because there was a wave of, what are we going to do with this guy? And there was already kind of people being shuffled in, such as Strope. Ayala was put in there. Johnson was thrown in every so often, that I didn't consider him to be the definitive closer.
Sure. Okay.
So I eliminated the 2012 season, but I just focused on the 2011 season. So the other thing I did was I basically stretched out his period. So I stretched it from April 2nd to June 29th of 2011, which gave him 32 games as opposed to Jim Johnson's 25 games that he's pitched in so far from April 2nd to May 26th.
And I think that's fair, and I hate to do this. I hate to give your method credibility, but I think that's fair because the Orioles at that point were not in enough games.
Correct.
To give him the save opportunities.
That's kind of what my point was. It wasn't a good enough team that Kevin Gregg wasn't able to come in and be the closer, so I had to extend it by one more month in order to make it competitive balance.
You know, and it's not that, oh, well, Jim Johnson is crapping the bed so much faster, and it's not that, oh, Kevin Gregg, you know, lasted that much longer. It's the fact that if you look at apples and apples, the rest of the team really requires you to stretch that
time
frame.
Now, I could have gone to the aspect of just go to 25 games for Kevin Gregg and just see what happens, but I wanted to go for something that was a little bit more obvious, and I wanted to go to blown saves.
Okay.
So by June 29th, 2011, Kevin Gregg had 4 blown saves for the Baltimore Orioles. It's now May 27th after today, and Jim Johnson sits at 4 blown saves a month earlier than Kevin Gregg was in June 2011. So I'm said, okay, well, it's just blown saves. Big deal, so what? Who cares? So I started to go through all the rest of the stats. Kevin Gregg pitched in 31 innings pitched. Jim Johnson's pitched in 24. Hits, they both have the same amount of hits, which means that Jim Johnson has given up more hits per innings pitched than Kevin Gregg did. Earned runs, 14 for Jim Johnson versus 11 for Kevin Gregg, which means that Jim Johnson has given up more runs than Kevin Gregg has. Strikeouts, 19 versus 25, so that's very close. Kevin Gregg is a little bit better, but again, Jim Johnson's not a strikeout artist, so I'm willing to exclude that. The other one that's a pretty severe one is Kevin Gregg, 20 walks to Jim Johnson, 7 walks. So that's a plus for Jim Johnson, is he's not Captain Chaos of, let's load the bases up.
He puts guys on and cleans them right out.
Right, exactly. But if you look at the ERA, Kevin Gregg has a 3.16 ERA for that time period, whereas Jim Johnson has a 5.25 ERA. If you look at the batters coming against him, Kevin Gregg's averages were 230, 346, and 389. And then Jim Johnson is 283, 347, and 424. So similar on base percentage, but the slugging percentage for Jim Johnson is a little bit tad higher than Kevin Gregg. So in nearly all categories, Jim Johnson is performing worse than Kevin Gregg was during the 2011 season.
You know, here's the interesting thing to me. You had sent me a text during one of the more frustrating games and said, you know, Jim Johnson, the protester.
Well, that was on Sunday.
Yeah, and I thought, well, that's a little harsh.
That's a little harsh. But then you look at the stats and...
Well, I started thinking about it. See, the other thing to keep in mind is that Kevin Gregg had a very good year closing out games in the AL East. He was with Toronto.
Yep.
Which is why the Orioles bothered to sign him in the first place. But he had a very solid year.
For $12 million, by the way.
Stop it. We're not doing this. Kevin Gregg had a great year, and then he came back and couldn't back that up.
Right.
And not only could he not back that up, he was a mess.
Well, you have to give consideration, too, from the previous season, which you had Gonzalez in there. And that started off so well as a closer situation as well.
Right.
How was that opening day, by the way?
We're not doing this. But then I thought about Jim Johnson. I was like, well, he had one really good year in the AL East closing down games, and then... Not only has he not been able to follow up on that, but he's been terrible so far.
Yep.
And so I think about those two things. Well, neither of these guys are Mariano Rivera. Okay, that's clear. Is it a case of simply the book gets out? You know, the dominance over one season gets broken down in the off season by everybody's video, and suddenly they say, oh, this is how you beat Jim Johnson. And while Jim Johnson tries to account for that, while he tries to adjust to that, while he tries to beat that book, he loses whatever it is that he did have, and he loses his command. I think you may have something here.
See, I don't. The only thing I'm going to come back and say is, if you look at Jim Johnson for the majority of the season, he was solid and dependable. I mean, the man was leading the American League in saves for a long period of time, and then he hit this patch, and it was, and it just hasn't been able to recover since then.
I'm sorry, it was what? Yeah, it was. It was.
So after he had won one of the games against, I guess it was the Yankees, and then he managed to save one of the games against Toronto, I was like, all right, Jim Johnson's back. He's going to get back on track. And then Sunday's game come, and I went, gah!
Sunday's game was awful.
Sunday's game was pretty awful. I don't normally get that bitter and disgusted from watching an Orioles game, but in this case, I was pretty bitter and disgusted and didn't really want to talk about it. The game was at 1 o'clock, so it ended around 4 o'clock, and then we actually went over to my wife's parents' house, and she said, if you can't behave, don't come at all. And I said, okay, I'll behave, and I just went grumpily along into the house, and I'm sitting there drinking a beer, and in walks her father, and he just looks at me, and I look back at him, he shakes his head, I shake my head, and he says, I can't believe that shit. And I said, I can't believe that shit either.
See, I listened to the game driving back from Southern PA for a family function and had to stew for the next hour in the car. There was no escape. And there was no music or chatting in the car with my family that could possibly save my mood.
Yep. But going back to the story with my father-in-law, I walked in and I was talking to him and I said, well, what do you think? And he's like, I'm reminded of this one pitcher that Boston used to have. His name was Oil Can Boyd.
Oh.
And I said, you know what? Funny you should mention Oil Can Boyd. We got into a long discussion about the protester and that Jim Johnson was the new protester and he was bringing Oil Can to the mound and basically letting himself on fire day in and day out right now. So Jim Johnson is my new protester. And right now he's got no place being the closer for the Baltimore Orioles. He needs to go and take a setup role either in the 7th or 8th inning, and he needs to work on his pitch command and his pitching position, because right now the ball's all over the place. Until he can actually start to know where he's pitching the ball, he's Pedro Strop.
Well, that was my question. Do you think that Jim Johnson can come down with a back strain?
No.
Hmm. Well, here's the thing. Scott, you've put together a very compelling case. You've put together a compelling case with numbers, with logic, And with just a little bit of Orioles fan bitterness. And I can get into all these things. I think that the designated closer is a little stupid, even as a non-stat guy.
Yep.
But having said that, I think that Buck is going to do it that way.
Absolutely.
It's very clear that he is. And so I think if that's going to be the way it is, we just have to let Johnson get himself back together. And I don't know what the magic number of games that he blows or games that he loses us is before Buck has to shy away from that. But you got to know that Buck is just going to start running him back out there until he gets himself right or until stuff really flies off the cart. So I'm going to say this. I'm throwing my support behind Johnson because I want that tool back in the ninth inning. You know, I want that piece of our bullpen back.
Yep.
I want O'Day to be free to be brought in at any point during the game. I want Pedro Strop, if he comes back, you know, to anything close to what he was last year, to have the flexibility to come back anywhere else. And I want to have a dependable guy that we know is going to come in the ninth. So I wish that I could, you know, give a real clear and compelling case for this is the line in the sand for a successful versus unsuccessful attempt to get Jim Johnson back on track. But it's kind of, I'll know it when I see it. You know what I mean?
Look, as much as I hate to admit it, I know that's what's going to happen. I know that Jim Johnson's going to continue to be the closer, and I know that it's not going to be a major change anytime soon. There's one thing that we have seen from Buck Showalter. It is, I'm going to be loyal to my players, and I'm going to constantly put them in, a.k.a. Ryan Flaherty.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm constantly put him in until he gets good. But eventually, like you said, a decision is going to be made. Hopefully, Jim Johnson rights the ship. But from everything I've seen, that ain't going to happen anytime soon. So I guess the only thing I can do is buckle up and be ready for heartbreak and misery coming forward.
All right. I hate agreeing with you, but good work here. When you don't give me the way to weasel out through the
excuses that you often
the
make.
The Barstool fan and the Orioles apologist side. That's a good segment. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done. I want to take a break real quick and come back and talk about O's Nats, and then we'll talk about what a great rivalry this is.
All right. We'll be right back. I'm going to let you get some composure back and, you know, dry the tears from your eyes after hearing your college's fight song there from being the D.C. native that you are.
You know, I think you have absolutely outdone yourself with the musical selections for today's show. You really have reached a new level. I don't know what level it is, but it's new.
They've got a great basketball team from what I hear.
It's true.
Did they even have fight songs where whatever godforsaken place you went to school?
We had, like, some song that we sung, like, twice. Like, I think, like, the first weekend we were there and, like, the last weekend we were there. But I can't even tell you what the first word was or what the last word was.
All right. Well,
it might have been Latin or something like that. I don't know. We were drunk most of the time, so.
I have been called a traitor here for having attended, for having the audacity to attend a DC school. But we're here to talk about O's Nats.
Was that a drama school?
Yeah, there was lots of drama.
Oh, I bet there was.
It's a very liberal,
liberal school.
So we're here
teach to people how to make birth certificates there, huh?
It's what we do. It's a foreign exchange trip to Hawaii. It's great. It's a great program. All right, we're here to talk about O's Nats. This is that very special time of the year where Masson tries really hard to make us care about the fact that the O's and the Nationals are 35 miles apart. We've talked about this ad nauseum. Is the O's Nats really a rivalry? And what is the feeling at this point?
The O's and Nats is a... It's like a rivalry as much as the Orioles and the Philadelphia Phillies are a rivalry.
You know, it's interesting, but only to a point.
Yeah, it's more of a minor annoyance to see someone wearing a curly W hat in your neighborhood or vicinity, and you're just like, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
It's the same thing with seeing a Philadelphia Phillies hat. You're just like... What the hell are you doing?
See, it's interesting for me because I spent some time in D.C. and I love D.C. But I really grew to be an anti-Nats guy, mainly just to spite my my college roommate. And Josh, my college roommate, actually has a Nationals podcast. It's called National Discourse, and you can check it out at National Discourse. But the thing
on Twitter and stuff like that, so you should go and plug that and send him nasty photos of Bryce Harper. He loves that.
We'll put the links in the show notes because I'm sure everybody's dying to
antagonize him.
Nats information, but I basically
nothing would make him happier than to be followed by like 60 to 70 Orioles followers.
That's right. I basically root against the Nationals just to spite him, and that's good enough for me. So we were going to have him on the show, but he's traveling this week to beautiful Key West. Jerk. But
it just shows you how much he cares about Maryland sports.
That's right. But as far as O's Nats is concerned, I've always said that it wouldn't really matter until both teams were good and the losses hurt. And so here we are, both teams are good, and it's just not there yet. I don't know if it's going to take a World Series showdown for it to become a rivalry, or if it's going to be the type of deal where one team knocks the other out of contention. But generally, the interleague play weekend isn't close enough to the pennant race for that to really happen. So, I don't know. Scott, is there anything save a Beltway World Series that we can hope to make this a real rivalry?
Well, there's two things that I came into this series, which is, I think, interesting. Number one, you have a rare instance where you've got a two-game back-to-back situation where you've got two games on the road and then two games at home. Which makes me really think that it's almost like a playoff series in all aspects, like a five-game playoff series. So you've got two games away and two games at home. So I'm approaching this almost like a five-game playoff series minus game five. So if the Orioles can take three of those four, I will consider it that they have won a playoff series. That's the way I'm approaching it. Number two, can this turn into a rivalry? Absolutely. What's the quickest way they can do it? Throw at Manny Machado. If they throw at Manny Machado, this will be a huge rivalry.
Now, what happens if Manny Machado runs himself into a wall?
Are they going to throw beer at him afterwards, or what?
No, this isn't Canada. They don't do that. Canada, this is why you cannot have nice things.
No, if they... I swear to God, if one of the pitchers came out tomorrow and they threw at Manny Machado's head, and Manny Machado ducked or it plunked off his head, I guarantee you my wife would get into the car, drive down to Washington, and commit some terrible act of terrorism on Washington, D.C.
All right, so you're telling me that save a headhunting Manny Machado event, there's not much...
Headhunting or throwing against his wrist or something crazy like that. That's the only way that there is going to be a rivalry between these two teams is there needs to be some fisticuffs involved, basically.
All right. I can see that. Now, here's the other thing about the O's Nats. Masson needs to get the message. This joining of the Masson family's bull is garbage.
And
you don't want to hear Bob Carpenter?
Nobody likes this. The worst part is it's RB lineup as far as the broadcasters go. Jim Hunter
and Mike Bordick
are not the best that we have to offer. And to hear that combined with the Nationals homerism with three innings of this and three innings of that, three innings of this, crap. Here's the damn it, they have two distinct stations. 161 other games of the year, you've got Masson 1 playing one game and Masson 2 playing the other game. The Nationals have a visiting broadcast booth. I've seen it. I know it exists. Why isn't it full of our guys? Why did they not have two distinct broadcasts like every other game of the year? I know they can do it. There's just no reason. And I swear to God, the people that are interested in both the Orioles and the Nationals enough to really get something out of the Masson families being brought together is less than the listenership of this show.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I would love to hear Gary Thorne and Jim Palmer be on the broadcast and be mercilessly bombing the Nationals players and the Nationals broadcasters and just basically be pointing and basically noticing to them of how much of a schmuck show they are. I mean, I guarantee you they went to Gary Thorne and Jim Palmer and said, hey, we want to do this combined broadcast between both Masson stations. No. And Jim Palmer said, I'm the best. I don't need those dipshits to be telling me about the Nationals. The Nationals weren't even a team when I was pitching. Well, sure they were. They were the Senators. That ain't the same team, dipshit. I guarantee you that's what Jim Palmer said to them. And then Gary Thorne came in there, and they said, Mr. Thorne, would you like to do a shared broadcast with the DC Pigs? And he went,
goodbye, vacation! Yes,
goodbye, home run vacation.
It's terrible.
It's a terrible, terrible, terrible idea for Masson to do these joint things, mainly because Nationals fans don't want to hear Baltimore. Baltimore doesn't want to hear the Nationals. They're two separate cities. Anybody that has lived here knows that. Go fuck yourself, you curly W.
And the thing, dude, I lived in the D.C. area for a few years. I love D.C. I love the D.C. area. I had such a good time there. But I do not care about their sports teams, even a little bit. In fact, I root against their sports teams. It's just what you do if you're from this part of town. And I do not want to be stuck with their announcers.
Yep. So, Masson, boo on you. Fix it. Everyone's upset about it. Make it better for next year because, heck, you can't pull anything and improve it within the next three games. But next year for the Masson Cup, split broadcast. It can't cost you that much more money.
It really can't. It really can't. All right, last thought about the O's-Nats series before I let this thing go. Can we talk about Major League Baseball fashion for a minute?
Sure.
I know it's your favorite subject.
It's my favorite subject.
Memorial Day is upon us, which means that we all pause and take a moment to honor those who have fallen and to thank those that serve in the military. And Major League Baseball has done this by making each team wear absolutely hideous uniforms.
Yep.
They're wearing camo hats with the logo, and I gotta be honest, camo hats are not for me, but it's not a total wreck. What I absolutely can't abide by is they're wearing their regular jerseys, except that all the lettering and numbering is camo rather than the team color. So, basically, think about it this way. San Diego has a big Navy base there. It's a big Navy town, and so on Sundays, rather than an alternate, they wear camo jerseys. Every Sunday that they're at home, they wear a camo jersey and then the blue Padres across the front. It's not good by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not a horror show. That's exactly what they should have done here. If you're going to go camo, do it that way. You can't have a gray jersey with Orioles written in camo and have it look like anything other than gross. Are you with me on this one?
I'm absolutely on with you with this. The fact of the matter is that if you look at not just the Orioles uniform, but all Major League Baseball uniform, you look at the lettering for it, and it's like, that's absolute crap. And if I was in the military, I'd look at that and be like, what a piece of crap. That is a piece of crap.
Thanks for the respect.
Thanks for the respect. You basically went and got some old Desert Storm uniforms, and you put them on, and this is absolute crap. Instead, this would be a prime opportunity to go out there and basically make brand new jerseys and really put them with like a modern feel. I mean, you think about back in the day when they were doing like the retro jerseys. I mean, not the retro jerseys. Well, retro jerseys won, but also when they did the futuristic jerseys, they could have easily gone and said, let's do army and fatigue camo jerseys, and that would have been a really cool thing to sell, because you've been like, all right, that's a cool thing to sell, because again, I could honor the veterans, but also I could also wear this in the future. I'm looking at one uniform right now. It's from Illinois, from, you know, College World Series for Illinois, and it's an orange and black and white camo uniform, and I can post this on the website, because again, this is right up your fashion area, and it's really cool looking. I'm not sure if it's perfect for the Orioles, but it's definitely in the scheme that the Orioles could have used. And again, this is not the Orioles' decision. This is Major League Baseball. And it's just absolute crap. Another one that I was looking at was one from West Virginia. And again, it's more of a futuristic camouflage. But again, something that could actually appeal to a youthful demographic. I just think that this look by Major League Baseball is just garbage, lazy, and, you know, all things considering, if they really think that's a respectful tribute to veterans and the armed forces, I don't see how it is.
That's really my angle. It doesn't seem like that much of a tribute to me. It doesn't seem... It seems lazy and half-handed, exactly like you said. Honestly, you know, each service has a designated cap, you know, and you saw this a lot after September 11th with, you know, the Navy hat or the U.S. Marine Corps hat. I would like each of the teams in the game to just wear those with their jerseys. Right. You know what I mean? Just divide them up amongst the teams, or divide them up amongst the players, what have you. Have each player wear a different, you know, hat to honor a different service, what have you. Patches, anything that you want that actually has something to do with Memorial Day, with the armed services, and not just, well, you know, camo is about fighting. It's very lazy, and I'm sorry, I think it's a very poor job that Major League Baseball has done.
I couldn't disagree with you. I totally agree with you, but this is absolute crap. Major League Baseball, fix it next year, or fix it for Veterans Day, or do something, because this needs to absolutely stop at this point.
Yeah, well, we
fashion faux pas. It's out.
We'll see what they do 4th of July, too. That's also another favorite.
I'm sure we'll just get some crap red, white, and blue thing, so...
Well, here's the... I even thought maybe have everybody wear the USA Baseball stuff.
That'd be pretty cool.
America! Do that, not whatever this is. All right, so that is my...
moment of fashion.
It's my little turn on the catwalk. We're going to come back. We're going to do the good, bad, and the ugly and get out of here.
All right.
Alright, we're back, and it is that time. Yes, it is that time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's the part of the program where we talk about the guys that have really stood out, the ones that have been miserable, and the ones that are a step beyond miserable. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the good, if that's alright.
You go for it.
And, you know, it felt like it was cheap all season to go with this, but I'm going to say that my good for the week is Chris Davis, because Chris Davis is back in a very big way. You know, he had that very big start, and he was hitting the cover off the ball, and it got to the point where it was boring to say, oh, you know, Chris Davis had a great day, or Chris Davis had a great week, and it felt like chalk, but it's really gotten back to the point where Chris Davis is tearing the cover off the ball. And the great thing about Chris Davis doing that is that it also makes everybody in front of him that much better. I feel like there have been so many times this week where, you know, Adam Jones either gets, great pitch to hit, or he gets walked, and I think, well, now you've walked Adam Jones, and your reward is that you get to deal with Chris Davis. But Chris Davis is just on fire. If you look at what he's done this week, I mean, he's hit 4 home runs this week. His average is 480. His slugging percentage is 1080, and his on-base percentage is a 581 clip. He is, hitting doubles, he's hitting home runs. He's back. He's back in a big way, and carrying an offense that is generally performing very well.
Yep.
So that's my good for the week.
All right. So my good was torn between two players. And these two players generally are batting right next to each other, but not always in the same order. The one player is always in the same position. The other player bounces between the 1 and 3 hole. So those two people are Nick Markakis and Manny Machado. So I was looking at this, like, who am I going to pick? But I decided to go with Nick Markakis because he's really an unsung hero right now. Manny Machado is getting all the publicity right now, both from national media and also local media. But Nick Markakis is kind of that unsung Oriole right now. But he's really doing an amazing job from both the leadoff position, but also in the three hole. Part of that is due because of Manny Machado being at the number two hole. But Nick Markakis has to be able to contribute at that both those positions in order to basically allow Manny Machado to have effective at-bats. So the fact of the matter is Nick Markakis being able to get on base and Nick Markakis being behind Manny Machado has allowed Manny Machado to succeed more so than he would have if there was no one batting behind him. So Nick Markakis is batting .393 this week, .469 on base percentage, and a .679 slugging percentage. He's just been getting on base, and you know, he also has 7 RBIs this week, and he also has 6 runs as well. So he gets my tip of the cap for good for the Baltimore Orioles this week.
All right. My bad for this week has to be Troy Patton. And we talked at one point about Troy Patton being the forgotten man in the pen, but this week he's really been forgotten for a reason. Troy Patton, you know, was part of that Gosman game where he came up, gave up a home run, a terrible situation, but Troy Patton has walked as many guys this season as he walked all last year. The guy's simply not getting it done. He's a guy who used to be dependable against lefties and righties, and right now you're seeing him get knocked around a little bit. As far as what Patton did this week, I mean, his ERA is astronomical. It's up over 15. He appeared in 2 games. He pitched an inning in 2/3, and in that time he gave up 3 earned runs, and his whip is 180. That's bad. It's not good news.
So that's bad, right?
Yes, we're going to call that bad.
Okay. I'm going to keep in the bullpen as well. My bad is Mr. Backache himself, Pedro Strop. I'm just looking at the games that he pitched in. 5-20 versus New York Yankees. That was the game he came in the 10th inning, gave the 2 runs, and allowed the Yankees to basically say, "Up, oh, game is ours." And then I'm also looking at the 5-23 game, which was the Gausman game, and basically not allowing it, Orioles to have even a chance left in that game after Gausman came out. So he gets my bad of the week. Again, it was so he was so bad that he had basically to fake an injury to get into the DL so that he couldn't be released.
It hurt me to watch him pitch.
Yeah.
So, all right, why don't you roll right into your ugly?
Ugly, Jim Johnson. Enough said.
Okay, here's the thing about that. Not only can I not argue with you, you've also stolen the only valid ugly for the week.
Yes.
In deference of how perfect that ugly is, I'm going to abstain from ugly for the week.
Okay.
Because everybody in the offense is really coming through. The offense is really clicking right now. And the starters have really started to amass some much better starts. They're really starting to come along. No superstar performances, but you're starting to get some quality innings from them, and the bullpen is just falling apart, and leading the charge is Jim Johnson. So he has to be ugly.
So in closing, Jim Johnson, double ugly. You're on notice. Get it together. Who are you? Now, who are you?
All right.
That's all I got.
That's all I got. All right. This week, ending on a good note, but if we may, the Orioles won 6-2 today against the dreaded Washington Nationals.
We've now seen this game twice today.
That's right. On and mute in the Bird's Eye View studios here.
So we got 3 more games looking against the Nationals. We've got a game on Tuesday in Washington, and then, hey, we got to come back to Baltimore for a Wednesday and Thursday game, and then we come against the dreaded Tigers this weekend, which should be a darn tough series.
Are we going to see Verlander during that series?
I don't really care, because we got the Gausman, so I'd love to see the Gausman go against Verlander.
That would be an interesting matchup.
Gausman is Verlander-esque, in my opinion.
Wow.
That's a way to leave it right there for you.
That's a lot in one thing. You know what? I'm just going to let that go.
Okay.
Baltimore and beyond. Adieu.
Good night, Baltimore.